gidul of the esrog. How the esrog is supposed to look. People say the bottom and the top are supposed to be lined up. It shouldn't be like funny shape. So the reason that I didn't mention it is because it doesn't really come up in hilchos esrog b'chlal. Unfortunately, people don't know the halachos. There's not that much you can do when you're looking at the esrog. So you look at it to look if it looks nice, if it feels nice. But the shape of it and the gidul of it is something that the person's own hargasha, and it comes after everything we spoke about last night. Maybe it can fall into the category of hiddur mitzvah, to have something, maybe it's even not considered hiddur mitzvah, zekeli vandeil, it's a sibur of mitzvah, something that a person likes and enjoys, but that's everyone's own personal taste. There's no din that the bottom and the top have to be lined up. There's no din how specific a gidul of an esrog is supposed to be. So that's why we did not mention it. Okay, in the pasuk it says we will cast them offend 3/8 other kapos tamarim. Second min is kapos tamarim, that's the lulav. So now a lulav doesn't need any special hechsher. There's no chash of grafting a lulav or being marked a lulav. You can get a lulav from anywhere, it doesn't make a difference as long as it's kosher lulav. In addition, on the lulav we're not looking for any funny spots, any black spots or white spots, so therefore you don't have to go for your lulav in the daytime with the sunlight. It doesn't make a difference. There's no spots that pass the lulav. So what are we looking for in a lulav? So I divided it basically into two categories. The first category is the tzura of the lulav, the actual form, the look from the outside of the lulav. So in the tzura of the lulav, the form of the lulav, there are three points that we have to keep in mind. The first point is the size of the lulav. What does the lulav look like? How big is the lulav? So now there is no maximum size. You could have a lulav, mamish, I've seen people with very, very tall lulavim. You could have as tall as you want a lulav. However, it is recommended that it fits in those bags that they wrap for the lulav, which has nothing to do with halacha, just since there is going to be a problem if the top gets nicked off. So you don't want to cause any problems with that. You want to be able to carry it around in the bag conveniently. So I wouldn't recommend this humongous lulav. But there is no shir lamala. You could have a very, very big lulav. However, there is a minimum shear, and this is one of the most important halachas in Hilchos Lulav. The minimum shear, the Gemara says, is dalet tefachim, four tefachim. Okay, now tefach is different shiurim in the tefach, but in a mitzvah d'oraisa, we have to go with the chazanishi shear, which means that a tefach is 10 centimeters, which means that four tefachim is 40 centimeters. Which means in English, 16 inches. That 16 inches is the shear of the lulav. So now most lulavim that you're looking at are about 16 inches, and most lulavim that you're looking at are bigger than that. However, it's very important to know like this, that the shear of the lulav is not in the entire lulav. You can't measure from the top to the bottom of the lulav. The shear of 16 inches of dalat chacham that has to be in the lulav, the Gemara says, shedroi shal lulav dalat chacham. The shear of the lulav, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is the shedra of the lulav. The shedra literally means the backbone. That's the hard part of the lulav. The lulav has a hard backbone, that's the shedra, the main, the spine of the lulav. And then around it comes all the leaves that surround the lulav till it goes to the top. Maybe we'll look at a lulav after the show. But that's the shedra of the lulav. The shear is in the shedra of the lulav. If the shedra, usually at some point towards the top, the shedra ends, then all those leaves that are surrounding it, from the top of the shedra till the top of the lulav, is only leaves. That does not count at all in the shear of dal tefachim. Shedra is a lulav dal tefachim. Even when you're measuring the 16 inches, you should buy a lulav with a tape measure. You should bring your tape measure when you buy a loaf. And when you should measure it, especially if it's a little bit small, to make sure that it's 16 inches of only the shedra, not including the leaves on top. That's one thing. First of all, you can't go all the way up to the top. In addition, it's not so simple if you could start from the bottom of the loaf when we're measuring the shear. The Bir Halacha has a suffix that it could be the part when they cut the lulav off the tree, the bottom part of the lulav that you have has no leaves around it. It's only the shedra, a thick shedra. Then the leaves start coming around the shedra, usually about a tefach after that, a few inches higher than that. So the Bir Halacha says, what about the bottom part of that lulav that doesn't have the leaves around it? Is that considered part of the lulav that you can count that in the shear or not? And the Bir Halacha has a suffix about it, but ma'aseh the chazanish is machmir. Chazanish says that you can't consider that as part of the lulav. Not everybody agrees to this, but the chazanish is machmir. Therefore, when we're trying to buy a lulav, we don't want to get into any problems for a mitzvah d'oraisa here of the minimum shear, of being below the minimum shear. Therefore, you need the shear should be dalet tefachim, which is about 16 inches. That's until the top of the shedra, from either the bottom of the lulav, or preferably from where the leaves start covering the shedra. And most who love them, again, there's no problem, and over yontif, the lulav doesn't get any smaller, so you don't have to worry about that. But you should be careful that it should be at least 16 inches from where the leaves start surrounding the shedra until where the shedra ends. As we said, there is no Shir Lamala. As a matter of fact, there is a Magen Avraham. Interestingly enough, it's not in Hilchos Galaminim. In Hilchos Chanukah, the Magen Avraham is talking about long candles, wax candles for the menorah. So he says, the longer the better. It's longer, it's Iddur Mitzvah, Kamay Esrig, the Lulav. It's like a big Esrig and a big Lulav. And you see there from the Lashon of the Magen Avraham that he assumes, as the Davar Pasha, that a long Lulav is a Iddur Mitzvah. It could be because then you're not messing around, it's close to the Shir, but it could be that it's time to hold a tall Lulav and do the shaking, the Nanuim, exactly the way he was supposed to do it. It could be you see from this Magen Avraham that there is actually a Iddur Mitzvah to have it a little bigger. But again, make it as in, you don't have to have the tallest Lulav. The main thing is that it should be Dalit Tfachim of the Shedra from where the leaves start covering the Shedra. Okay, so that's the first thing in the Tzura of the Lulav, just to know exactly the size of the Lulav. The second thing when you're looking at the form at the Tzura of the Lulav is that the Lulav should be very straight. There's a Braisa in Sukkah, the Aflam Beis, that says if the Lulav is curved, Akum, if it's crooked, Goyim Lamago, similar to a sickle that has a curvature, a curved sickle, so Akum is Goyim Lamago is possible. This is all only if it's the curve is away from the shedra. If you're standing with the shedra towards you, the curve's away from the shedra, that's a problem. If the curve's back towards the shedra, that's not a problem. Now, most of the time that you find a lulav that's not so straight, it's not curved, mamish, daima lamado. To find this, so I don't know if I ever saw a lulav that was puzzle, that's okum daima lamado. However, the reason I'm mentioning that a person should try to get a straight lulav is because the place can bring that Rav Sadri Goyim, when he told people how to buy a lulav, he writes in the Siddur, they have a Siddur of Rav Sadri Goyim. He says, a year, Yashar, you should make sure that it's straight, loy ma'ukum klal. It should not be in any way ma'ukum. And it would seem that Rav Sadri Goyim understands that there's a hitter mitzvah lechatchila, that not just that it shouldn't be doyim lamagal, it shouldn't be like a sickle, but it should be very, very straight. And you'll see a lot of times, Tamil Chachamim, when they pick up the lulav, they make sure it's the right size, they hold it out horizontally like you're playing pool, and they want to see that it's straight. Now, they're not looking for the psul of doyim lamagal because that would be very easily recognizable if it was mamish like a sickle. They're trying to get with this Rav Sadri Goyim that the lulav should be straight, and therefore it is a hiddur to get a perfectly straight lulav. That's the second thing. The third thing about the tzura of the lulav is that what? Sideways is a suffix in the Gemara, the Maisa we pass in Lachum. Sideways is a problem as well. But again, the model you probably won't find in any direction, but it should be best if it's straight. Okay, the third thing is that the leaves, as they're going around with the hugging the shedra, sometimes they separate a little bit, and it's not like a very tight lulav. The leaves are getting a little loose. So the Mishnah says that if it's nifidu, if it's separating the leaves from the shedra, it's still kosher. However, the Ramah says that it's a mitzvah min amukhar to get a lulav she'ein alav prudos, that the leaves are not separating away from the shedra. Your person should try to find a lulav where the leaves that are going up around the shedra are hugging the lulav very tightly, and therefore not just the shedra is going to be very straight, like you just said, but also the leaves itself don't make the lulav look very spread out. It should be hugging the lulav very tightly. So that's again also a mitzvah min amukhar, but we try to get the best lulav, we try to get these three things. The three things in the two of the lulav is that the size should be at least 16 inches of the shedra, till the top of the shedra, and not including any hot, and preferably not including the lower part as well. In addition, it should be very straight. The psul is if it's curved like a sickle, but the best thing is if it's mamish straight, loy ma'ukum klal, that it's not at all curved. And the third thing is that the leaves, not just the shedra, but the leaves should be hugging the shedra very tightly, that the whole lulav should look like one big stick, that the leaves are hugging all the way to the top very tightly. Those are the three things I think that are most important in the tzura of the lulav. Now, the main thing in the lulav, after you know which type of lulav you're getting, what it's going to look like, the main thing you have to check is something called the tziyaymis. Tziyaymis, tough yud, vav, mem, sof. Tziyaymis, that word is one of the most popular words in Hilchos Lulav, and that means the middle leaf. The Olah HaEmtzoi is what the Rishonim call it, the middle leaf. There are a number of psulim, we're going to discuss now a bunch of the psulim that come up on the tziyaymis. Most of the psulim in lulav are not negeh at all to any of the other leaves. It's very hard to find a psul in a lulav and all the other leaves. The main thing is that vulnerable middle leaf, that's usually the tallest leaf, that gets nicked and that can get dry, and that will see all the psulim on the tziyaymis. But the first thing before we get to all the dinim of the tziyaymis is to actually define what exactly is the tziyaymis. The definition of a tziyaymis, the Rishonim is saying, is the Olah HaEmtzoi, the middle leaf. Now many people think that the tziyaymis is the tallest leaf. And when they start checking the tziyaymis, they take the lulav from the top, they see that each leaf ends in a different place, and then this one ends the top one, the highest one, and they start checking that one with all the magnifying glasses and all the chumras to see exactly what they're doing. Lamaisa, it is usually the tallest leaf, but it's not the definition of tziyaymis is not the tallest leaf, and there are many cases I've seen a lot of lulavim where the tiyomis was actually not the tallest leaf. And all the dinim that we're going to say are apply only to the tiyomis. The rishonim say it's the alaha emtsoi, it's the middle one. Sometimes, how do you figure out what's the middle leaf? Basically, it's like this, without a lulav, but the basis, the thing is like this. Because it'll just spatter it out. I'll show it after, but it's pretty easy to understand. Going up around the shed of the lulav is leaves, usually on each side, each leaf on one side has a partner on the other side. You like one over here, one over here, and then a little bit higher. They usually, you could find the match as you're going up the lulav. You're starting from the bottom, not from the top. Start from the bottom, you'll be able to find basically the partner of each leaf. As it gets to the top where the shedra stops, then the shedra itself becomes different leaves. The shedra stops being the thick shedra, becomes into different leaves, and that ends in usually three leaves and sometimes two leaves. If it ends in three leaves, so then the middle one of that three is called a tiyomis. There's no such thing as three tiyomtin. If it's three, you block out the right and the left, and the middle one is a tiyomis. That is most of them. Some rare cases you have it going up in two leaves, and then both of those things are called a tiyomis, and we have to be knowing all the chumras that we're going to learn soon about the tiyomis by both. That's called shnei tiyomtin. It has two tiyomis. But the normal case of a lulav is where it has three, which by definition really means that it's one, the emtsoi, the ala emtsoi, the middle leaf will have the tiyomis. I was once in a lulav store, and there were a lot of talmid chacham there fighting over a certain lulav, not because they all wanted it, but they were fighting over what the din was of this lulav. And the maisa, there was a big machlokes, what was the tiyomis? Before you get to anything, what the din is of the tiyomis, but they were fighting what is the tiyomis, because some assumed that it was always the tallest leaf, and some thought it was the emtsoi. But if you learn the inyanim, it's mefurish in the rishonim that it's the ala emtsoi. Some rishonim use the nusach ala al-yayna emtsoi, and that's because it usually is the al-yayna, but nobody says that it's only al-yayna. The definition that the rishonim give is the emtsoi, the middle leaf, and that's the one. And sometimes when the tiyomis is the emtsoi and it's not the tallest one, that can be sometimes the most perfect lulav, because then that tiyomis is protected by the one next to it, which is very tall. Most of the problems happen to the tallest leaf. So if you find a lulav and you're convinced that the tiyomis is not the tallest one, take a good look at that tiyomis, because it's usually very good. I saw already one in Simcha's batch where there's the alaha emtsoi is not the al-yayna. It's a very nice tiyomis. Go find it. But anyway, so that's the definition of the emtsoi. Okay, so now what is the din of the tiyomis lamaita? Why? What are we looking for in the tiyomis? So the first thing we're looking for is that it shouldn't be niktam roisha. Niktam roisha means that the top of the tiyomis, the top of this leaf, is niktam, is chipped off, cut off a little bit, and the way you check that is to make sure that the lulav at the very tippy top comes to a nice point. If it comes to a point, so then you know it's not niktam, this is its natural thing. If it comes as it's coming to a point, and then suddenly it gets like very flat. So if it gets very flat, that's already a makom to be choishish, to be worried that maybe this thing is niktam. Again, it really takes an expert to know. Sometimes as it gets to the top, it looks pretty pointy, but if you look at it a little closely, you see that it looks a little flat. So really, in such a case where you have a pshash of a niktam, you're worried that it might be niktam, you should really show it to an expert who knows a lot more about lulavim, and they'll be able to tell you, usually, if it's a niktam or not. But the best way to go is if it comes managed to a nice pointy top, that's usually the simen muvuk that it's not that it's not a niktam. Now again, the psul of niktam is very important. This is a psul because it's not hug. That's what it says in Rashi. Yeah, Rashi and Sukkah says that the psul of niktam is because it's not hadar. We learned yesterday an important rule in anything where the problem is hadar, that the Ma'vid says, he says it lagabi nesu, but the place can bring lagabi lulav also. If the psul is because it's not hadar, then you don't have to do any hisakas. You don't have to be staring at it, looking at it, using magnifying glasses. You have to keep it at arm's length and see. Therefore, if the psul of niktam is because it's not hadar, if you're standing at arm's length and it looks like it comes to a very nice pointy top, and only if you're scrutinizing the imamish look and you see, you know, it gets a little flat, so then you don't have to worry about it b'chlal, even if it is a niktam. Because the whole psul of niktam, according to the Ma'arit and the other paiskim, is because it's not hadar. If that's the case, we have to apply the guidelines of hadar, which is that we look at it without his status. Okay, the second thing on the tiyomis that we're looking for the psul on tiyomis is terminologies that are very important to get clear. Really, we'll put two things together. One thing is called nechlekah tiyomis, that the tiyomis is split. The other thing is called nistak kehim. Nistak means that the tiyomis is cracked, like a sedek is a crack. Nistak with a samach. Kehimnik like a himnik. I'm not going to translate that because that's a very vague word. It's an Aramaic word. Kehim. So nechlekah tiyomis, if the tiyomis is split, or nistak kehimnik, or if it's cracked, so then this is possible. Now, what does this mean? Every leaf of a lulav, as you'll see when you look at a lulav, every leaf is really twofold. besides all the leaves going around the shedra, if you take one leaf, don't do this to your kashra lulav, but if you have a pasal lulav or an extra lulav, so you, every leaf, if you completely see where it's like the middle of the leaf, you could rip it down, you'd have mamish two sides, that's what they make the bindalach, the, you know, to wrap around, to put on the lulav, that's made from the leaves of the lulav. Because every lulav is an ala kafel, it's a double leaf, it's a folded leaf really of two parts. That, those two parts have to be mamish connected. If they're nechak, if it's split by the top leaf, by the tiyomis, shouldn't say the top leaf, say the middle leaf, by the tiyomis, the middle leaf, which is usually the tallest one, but not always the tallest one, if it's the middle leaf is nechaka, if it comes to a split instead of being perfect together, that's called nechaka and tiyomis. Now that's also nistak. Nistak means cracked, it means basically the same thing, but we have to get clear exactly what's together. Both these things are possible. When is there a psul of nechaka and tiyomis? How much does it have to be split in order to be possible? So the Ramah says, the only time nechaka and tiyomis is possible is if the top leaf is split all the way down to the shedra, which means where that leaf starts. It starts at the end of the shedra, at the end of that spine of the lulav, then starts these leaves. That middle leaf, the middle of the three, or the two, if it ends in two, that is only considered the psul of nechaka tiyomis if all the way down to the shedra it's possible. The Mishnah Berurah brings that the Vilna Gaon was more machmir, and he says if most of the way down to the shedra it's split, that's also possible. Rubai kekuloi, if most of it is split, so then that's also upsol. That's the chumrah of the Vilna Gaon. However, if only a little bit is split like this on top, but not all the way down to the shedra, to the beginning of it, and it's not even roiv, so then that's not the psul of nechaka tiyomis. Now, if it's split a little bit and it's not the psul of nechaka tiyomis, it is not so simple that this lulav is kosher. Why? Because it depends what angle it's split. If it's split, it looks a little bit like a V. But what's the V? Is it a tall, thin V? Or let's say it's split like this. Only a centimeter, only very little bit, not all the way down to the shedra. But the angle that it splits is mamish like spread apart. So that is called nistak kim. Nistak means it's cracked, and it looks like the form of a utensil that was called a himnit. A himnit, the Rishonim drew a picture of it. It's a picture of a V. They just make like a V. But again, when it has a V, so it's very unclear how big is your Gemara, and how, like, what angle exactly are we discussing with the V? The Rishonim don't give exactly inches and centimeters, exactly what is the V. So everyone tries to figure out what this word came in. Lamaisa, there are places in the Chayotim, for example, who's so machmir, that says that if you can see the crack, even if it's mamish like together, but you see like a line, a crack, that's already nistakehim. Because once the sedek is nearer than nayin, that's called nistakehim, which is a very big chiddush, a l'chumra, saying that if it's cracked a little bit on top, even if it's not all the way nechaka tiyomis, it's still going to always be possible if you could notice that crack of nistakehim. Lamaisa, the Rishonim, they say, Rishonim, that they say it's pasuach harbe, nistak harbe. It sounds like they're saying that it's not just a little bit of like a tall, thin V. They're talking about that it's harbe, it's open a lot, again, without saying exactly how much it is, but they say nistak harbe. Now, Lamaisa, there is a Rishon that brings a Hebrew word for this hymnic, and that is the Meiri on that Gemara, and he says nistak hymnic is kemechuga, like a mechuga. Mem, ches, vav, gimel, hey. So now we don't have an Aramaic word, we have a Hebrew word. So what's a mechuga? So when I was learning the Nyanu Dal Minim, I spoke to Rabbi Kavish's brother-in-law, in Eretz Yisrael, Mordechai Ben Izvi, Vitam Chacham, who was also learning the Nyanu Dal Minim then, and he was so happy that the Me'iri brought the word Mechuga, because he knew a pasuk that it says Mechuga, it's a pasuk in Yeshaya, it's in one of the Akhiras, and it says Yisareyu B'Mechuga, that they circled it with the Mechuga, and if you look in Rashi, in that pasuk, Rashi says, what's a Mechuga? In Bo Lasei Tziurim Agulim, if people want to make round Tziurim, round pictures, Misavi Voisei B'Mechuga, you make the circle B'Mechuga, with the mechuga, compass belongs. Rashi says that the word is a compass. A mechuga means a compass. That means you have, they stick down something in the middle, and then this is the V, and you put one in the middle, and then you draw a surah of a circle around it. Now, keep in mind, again, a compass is not something that you're making dots with, you're making circles with. So there are many different angles that you can put it on, but the fact that it's not like this is the chayim of war from that Meiri, which uses the word kemechuga, because mechuga means a certain separation that a person who wants to make drawings of a circle would do that. Lamaisa, I found afterwards what the word hymnic means, and we're learning Bava Metzia, so the makar for how I found what a hymnic is was from a Gemara Bava Metzia. There's a Gemara Bava Metzia that Chafei, that talks about small utensils that sometimes get thrown into the garbage by mistake, and the question is if there's yish. So the Gemara on Chafei Amid Beis says that Sakini v'Himnik, knives and hymnics, sometimes get thrown into the garbage. And it seems to be some sort of a fork. So Rabbeinu Chananel says there on the side of our Gemara, and the Chofer Beis, what's a hymnic? A kli sheyesh boi beis rushing, a kli that has two heads, it's like a two-pronged fork. The derech b'nei yavon, the way the Greeks used to eat, lahafsik chatichas basa, they used to take this hymnic and stick it in the meat, v'lachtechim hasakin v'lefel, then they would cut the meat with the knife, v'noitel zeh shechatach, they would take with the hymnic the piece of meat that they ate, v'noitel v'toich piv, and they put with the hymnic, they would put it in their mouth, v'ein yod of noigois b'basa klal, their hands wouldn't touch the meat. Mamish changed people, right? They take a hymnic and they cut the meat and then they eat the meat with that and their hands wouldn't even touch the piece of meat. This is a regular fork that all of us use. Like, however, by the Yevonim it was two prongs instead of four prongs. So here is the hymnic. When it says nistak hymnic, it means they had this kli. And again, to be an effective fork, the stomach didn't look like this. The stomach was a little bit separated, like the Rishayim say, pasuach chade, and that's the part of the type of nistak hymnic. So now what we have is like this. If it's nechlokati yoimis in a way that's tall and thin, it's only possible if it goes down all the way to the shedder. Or like the Vilna Gaon says, right for the way to the shedder. But a little bit, the tall V, if you look at your lulav and it looks pretty much together, but it has a little split, that's not going to be a problem. However, if it's kehimit, which again, I didn't give exact guidelines, but it's something that's pasuach harbe, a little more than the average split that you'll find in most lulavim. If it's pasuach harbe, then it's possible if it's at that angle, even if it goes down only a little bit. Now, here's the catch, and this is where a lot of people it throws a lot of people off this thing. The Ramah says that even though Nechlokati Yoimis is only possible if it goes very far down, Roiv of the leaf or all of it, there's a mitzvah min amukhar, there's a special mitzvah that a person should try to be careful that it shouldn't be Nechlok even a drop. That means even the Nechlokati Yoimis Psul, which is only going to be if it goes most of the way down, all the way down, it's best if it's not split at all. This is what the Ramah says is mitzvah min amukhar. Not that it's possible, but it's mitzvah min amukhar, it's best to get such a loot. So this throws people off, because then what's that, this whole explanation that we said in Nistak HaHimnik that it has to be a certain angle for Pasuach HaHimnik, this whole thing is not again anymore. When you're looking for a lulav, even if it's not HaHimnik, even if it's a very thin, tall reed, right, you're still not supposed to get that lulav because the mitzvah min amukhar is not to get it. So the first thing we have to know is that the big difference in halacha between mitzvah min amukhar and pasul. Pasul, the psul is if it goes all the way down or right over the way down, or if the angle is like a HaHimnik, a real wide V. Over here, the Ramah is saying mitzvah, but it's not possible. If it's getting close to Yantif and you can't find a better lulav, you could take such a lulav. It's not possible. Why shouldn't you take a bechla? What's the mitzvah min amukhar? The Mishnah Berurah explains, because since it's a little bit open, as you're shaking the lulav a lot on Yantif, so it could be that you'll be prone to opening a little bit more, and then it might be a really nechlokati yoimis all the way down. That might be a problem. So we're worried, a technical worry over here. It's a chash in the metzias that it can open further, but not that it's a psul at that point. That's the ikar difference, even though it says mitzvah min amukhar to get it closed all together, but if it's not perfectly closed, as long as it's not kehimnik, that's not going to be a problem. And there's a very practical nafkamina, a very practical difference between this din and the din of nechlokati yoimis. And this is with the famous trick or plan that the Paiskin came up with in recent years, which is that the two parts of this leaf, or the middle leaf, is a little bit split. You get someone who knows what they're doing, and you give them a little bit of crazy glue, and you can put on the inside of both sides a little bit of crazy glue, you put it together, and manish, no one will know the difference. It's a perfect, straight lulav, and it's kosher, and it's mehudu. Rabbi Eliashiv and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman both said that this is only if it's not a psul. If it was possible, if it was most of the way down, or all the way down, or if it was nestak to him, was a hymnic, then you can't use glue and put it back together. That's the rule we said yesterday. Chibur, they are the main chibur. We said it like gluing back the pigeon. If you have something that's puzzle, you can't glue it back artificially a person and be machshir psul. So gluing back the pigeon will not work. Well, then if it's nistak a hymnic, it's very far away, and you have a lot of glue and you put it together, that's not going to be machshir a little if that was puzzle. However, this mitzvah and amukhar is a worry that it's going to extend. The split is going to extend. But the Ramah himself is not saying that it's possible. He's just saying it's a problem because throughout Yom Kippur it'll extend lower down. So if the problem is only that we're worried in the Metzias that it's going to go extend further down, then Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Eliashiv both said that then for sure there's no problem to use glue. Again, you should have someone who knows what they're doing. You don't want to mess it up big time and make a real nicktime out of it. But if you have someone who knows what they're doing, who's handled a lot of lulavim and he could glue it, that's the very important difference to clarify for people. If there's a din of nechlokati yoimis all the way down, and this takimnik is if it's a far angle, but what's the difference? You're not supposed to get a split bechlal. The answer is you have to know when it's possible. First of all, it's always important to know what's possible and what's mitzvah min amukhar in case you have a shas of fat. But besides that, there's imamish a practical nafkamina that if it's not a psul, it's just that we're afraid it's going to extend. So then, putting the glue on it is going to help. Whereas if it became puzzle already, if it was kahimnik, or most of the way down towards the shedra, then gluing it back together is not going to help, because chibur ayidei adam in a chibur in order to fix the psul. Okay. So that's the din of nechel kati yomitz, and it's takin. The third thing that people are looking for, besides the nikdam roisha, whether it's cut off, and nechel kati yomitz, nistak, the split of it, the third thing that we're looking for on the tiyomitz is, another thing that many people are looking for, is that it shouldn't be yavish, it shouldn't be dry. What does that mean? The Mishnah says, lulav ha-gazel ha-yavish pasul, lulav that's stolen or lulav that's dry is pasul. Now the simple pshat, the psul of lulav ha-yavish, the dry, has nothing to do with the tiyomitz. And the Shulchan Aruch is brought down, if most of the leaves are dry, that means they don't have that green color to it, it's getting mamish white, yalbinu panav, then the lulav is pasul. That should have nothing to do with the tiyagis. However, the Vilna Gaon has a chiddush, a chumrah, that if the top leaf itself, even the tippy top of kol shel, is a little bit white, and it's white because of the dryness of it, it lost its color, even if the rest of the lulav is perfectly with its green color and it's considered moist and it doesn't have any problem with yuvashis, if the tippy top is white because of yuvashis, because it's of dryness, so then that's going to be a psul of lulav hayavish. That's the chum of the goyin. The chazinish argues on it, other parts can argue it's based on a mechudish the kipshat that the goyin has. We're not going to get into it in some rishonim, but lamaisa the gra says that such a thing is a psul of lulav hayavish, and therefore if you want to be marked for this vilna goyin, in addition to looking that it comes to a nice point and that it's not necessary too much, a person should be careful also that it's green to the top and it shouldn't be white. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. Now, there is...
It,
with, what?
Is that what the Vilna Gaon says?
Yes, because he's asking a good point. Do you need a stakus for that, or do you say together of the mabit that you don't need a stakus? Since lulav hayavish it's a beferish gemara, the first gemara lulav hagazel, that the psul of yavish is the lav hader. If it's dry, it's not beautiful. So again, it would go with the rules of hader. The place can say beferish that it's you don't need a stakus. Okay, now that's yavish if it's white. Let's say sometimes the top of the lulav, if you're looking at lulavim, it doesn't become white, but it's still not a perfect green color. Sometimes you have, because it was out in the sun a lot, it gets a little sunburned, they call it. It's from the Chayim HaShemesh, it gets a little sunburned, it's a little brown. A little bit brown on top. It's not white, but it's brown. So what's the din of this brown? The place can, where Mesupit, is this considered yavish? Again, even if it's yavish, it's only a problem according to this chumra of the Vilna Gaon. But if you're trying to get a lulav that's good, even according to the Vilna Gaon, so what would be the din if it's brown? So most poskim said, even if you're going to be marked with the Vilna Gaon, that's only if it's white, yalbinu panav, only if it's white, but if it's brown, that's not considered yavish. However, the Brisker Rav was marked. The Brisker Rav said that even if it's brown on top, that's that sunburnt that it gets because it was outside in the sun for all those months, that's also considered a yavashis. He didn't say where he knows it from, but that's what he assumed, that that's called a yavish, and that's the Brisker Rav's chumra. And if you're buying lulavim and lulavim store, you'll see a lot of people throwing around the terminology a Brisker lulav. A Brisker lulav, I don't know who I'm saying shining, but the Maisa, people call it a Brisker lulav, and this is the definition of a Brisker lulav. A Brisker lulav doesn't mean anything more kosher, all the dinim are the same whether you're in Brisker or not, but the Brisker lulav means that they're makvid, that it shouldn't be, that it should be green fully to the top. Now if it's green as opposed to white, a lulav that's white is not just not a Brisker lulav, that's already not a Vilna Gaon lulav. A Vilna Gaon also didn't want it if it's white. A Brisker lulav means that if it's brown, they won't take it. It has to be managed green all the way to the top. But this one, we're supposed to weigh out some of the dinim that I'm Ikaradin and some only a chumra. I would say that this Brisker Rav Shita is a chumra al gabe chumra, which means that it's based on the Vilna Gaon's chumra that yavish is possible on the very tippy top. Plus, it's an extra chumra assuming that brown has the same din of that yavish. Therefore, if you have a chash niktam on such a green lulav, and you have another lulav that's not so green all the way to the top, it has a little bit of brown on the top, but it's a beautiful lulav and comes to a nice point, you should definitely go with the one that's not a problem of niktam, which might be a real psul, meikaradin. Okay, so that's the din of yavish. Now, sometimes you have on the top of the lulav, it doesn't come up to a perfect straight like most lulavim come. Sometimes it has like a little hook on top, like a fishing hook. It has a hook on top, a lot of lulavim have it. That's called by the poskim a knepel. Knepel is a hook. So that's a certain type of lulav that has the fishing hook on top. So the ma'isa, what's the deal with this lulav? Is it good? Is it possible? Is it better? So it's actually a machlokes. The Braisa says in Sukkah, the Aflamid Aleph on the base, that if the lulav is kafuf, which means that the lulav is bent, so then it's possible. Not akum doyma lamago with the whole shedra like a sickle. Says the lulav is kafuf, if the lulav is bent, so that's possible. So the Ritva and the Ran over there say that it doesn't just mean if the shed was a little bent, it means even if the leaves are bent, just the top leaves are a little bit bent, like this hook of the knepel, that's mamish the psul of the braisa of kafuf. A lulav that's kafuf is possible. Before in the braisa that kafuf is possible, the question is just what's the definition of kafuf? According to the Ritva and the Ran, kafuf is possible means this lulav which has the knepel on it is possible and a person can't make a bracha on it. However, the Rosh says over there, in the tshuva, the Rosh in the tshuva, says that first of all, the psul of kafuf is only if the shedra is bent somewhat, but the leaves on top, if the leaves have that hook, that's not a problem of kafuf. Not only that, the Rosh says, oyev ani yoyser lotes boy. I prefer such a lulav that has a knepel. You know why? Because when it has the knepel, so then the yoymus is very protected. It's like tucked in over there, and it's probably not going to be nicked on by something walking by, and it's not going to be nechlika, it's not going to be split, because most problems happen when the yoymus sitting up very high gets hit or gets open or gets bumped into as they're transferring it in the truck or whatever. But if a lulav has a knepel, so the Rosh says not only is it not the psul of kafuf, but adrab, it's a preferred lulav because you're pretty safe that it's not going to have any other psul. So now how do we pass them? The Shulchan Aruch brings down the Rosh, but the Rosh used to like this lulav. And Lamaisa, the Mishkabur says that the minig of the world is lahakal. The minig of the world is to rely on this Rosh, not necessarily to prefer such lulav, but to say that don't worry about the Ritva and the Ran, but say that that's the psul of kafuf. Lamaisa, the minig is lahakal. However, the Mishnah Berurah says at the end, "V'ayin b'shari tshuva." And if you look in the Shari Tshuva brings a whole list of poiskim that are very worried about the other Rishonim, the Yankov Emdin and the Radvaz and the Bach. They all say that you're right; the Rosh preferred it. But according to many Rishonim in the sugya, not only is it not preferred, but it's not mishpachal. It's goes into the category of kafus, and therefore, even if the Rosh preferred it, but lemaisa, once you're getting involved in the shayla, you might as well take the regular lulav that's perfectly straight. That's not possible according to anyone, and like this, you'll be yotzi according to everyone. So again, a person can make their decision. The Mishnah Berurah says the minig olam is the hakol, so a person can take a lulav with a knevel. However, I would not highly recommend it because then you're getting yourself involved in a suffix. Mishnah Berurah himself, after he says it as the minig olam, he says v'ayin b'shari tshuva. Like if you want to go further into the Indian, look in the shari tshuva that brings a school of rishonim who are vehemently against this kula. So again, even though it's the minig olam and you can't go against the minig of the world, there are many people who taka prefer it, just like the Rosh preferred it. But it's not the most highly recommended lulav since you get involved and that shayla that it might be a psul of kafuf. Okay, that's the din with knepel. And the last thing that about on top of the lulav is that sometimes the lulav is closed off on top with that brown stuff that's not actually part of the lulav, but it's closed there on top of the lulav. That stuff is called the kara in I don't know a language, I guess Yiddish or Hebrew, but it's called the kara. That's how they refer to it. But it's that brown stuff that holds it together. It's that sometimes until it's peeled off, is blocking a good part of the lulav. So now there are many people who like this. Some people like when the lulav can obviously see the green of it from the backside. It's mamish filled with that brown, and the reason that they like it is because usually it holds the lulav very stiff together and you make sure that it's not split. That's true, that's usually what happens. However, the most place can say that a lulav like this is also not recommended. Why is that? Two things. First of all, the kara is not part of the lulav. Therefore, even if the kara holds it together, but you can't see what's going on inside that kara. If you were to rip off that kara, it could be inside, it's mamish ahimik inside. It could be the inside there, it's mamish yavish. It could be it got dry and it's like it, which the Vilna Gaon would say you shouldn't pay. So it could be the absolute going on in the lulav, and the fact that you can't see it because the brown stuff is blocking it is not going to protect you. If you have to, if you take off the brown stuff and you see that there's a hymnic inside of it, so that's a lulav that's possible. Therefore, most places these days say that someone should take off the kara before a person buys a lulav in order to check to see that it shouldn't be nechlik at the yomis or nistak hymnic. You shouldn't take a lulav that's full of that brown stuff that you won't be able to see what's going on inside. In addition, another reason why we don't want to take a lulav with so much kara on it is because there's a shayla how you're supposed to shake the lulav. Many Rishonim said that you don't have to mamash shake it, you just move it back and forth. But the Rama says, and that's how we paskin, that a person should actually shake the leaves of the lulav. It should be making a noise. The lulav should shake. Again, you shouldn't shake, overdo it, because you don't want to make psulim. But the Rama says a person should have kiskus ha'alim, which means the leaves should be shaking and making like rattling noise. So when a person has a kara on it, it's for sure there's not going to be kiskus ha'alim. So I've heard that myself from Paiskim and Eretz Yisrael that say that the lulav with the kara, forget about what's going on inside, but you're not going to be able to shake it in the proper way according to the Ramah. Therefore, it's better to have a lulav, even though again the leaf should be hugging it tightly, like we mentioned before, but it shouldn't be connected with this kara, and therefore when a person shakes it, it'll be very good nanu. Okay, so let's summarize again the Ikar HaDinim that we have regarding the lulav. Regarding the tzur of the lulav, we said that there's basically 3 points. The tzur of the lulav, first of all, the size of the lulav should be 40 centimeters, which is 16 inches, according to the Chazon Ish Shear. And again, the shear is in the shedra of the lulav, in the backbone of the lulav. That means you can't calculate all the way up till the tippy top, only till where the shedra ends and it starts becoming those leaves, the tiyomis that we mentioned before. You can only count to the top of the shedra. Shedra shalulav dalat tfachim. And where can you start from the bottom? According to the Chumra of the Chazon Ish that we mentioned, you could only start counting from where the leaves start covering the actual lulav and not below that. That's the minimum shear of the lulav. And as the Magen Avraham said, if it's bigger, it could be even a hidur mitzvah. The second thing about the tzur of the lulav, we said it should be very, very straight. It's only possible if it's mamish curved like a sickle. But Rav Tzadi Goin says, yeah, yosher loy meukam klal, it should be straight. L'chatchila should be perfectly straight. The third thing we said is that l'chatchila, the leaves should not be nifridu, the leaves should not be separating away from the shedra. They should be hugging the shedra very tightly. And even though the Mishnah says nifridu olive is kosher, but the Ramah says nifsam and amukha that it should be hugging it tightly. Those are the three things we said about the tzur of the lulav. Now l'gabi the tiyomis, which is the main, the olah, I'm sorry, the middle leaf that we have to check for the psulim, he said basically 5 points about the tiyomis. First point was that it shouldn't be nikdam, it shouldn't be chipped off, it should come to a nice point on top. The second thing we said is that the two parts should not be split, because you don't want a problem of nechelka atiyomis or nistakehim. The psul of nechelka atiyomis is if it's split most of the way down to the shedra, or possibly if it's all the way down to the shedra, or a matzah, even if it's only most of the way down, that's possible. The psul of nistakehimnik is if it's separated even a small centimeter, even a little bit, if the angle is like a himnik, if it's pasuach habit. He said the Ramah said mitzvah min amufar, that even if it's not like a himnik, it shouldn't be split at all. But that's because of a simple chash that it might throughout yontif get further down. And for that we said, since it's not a real psul, you could glue it back together, and to avoid the problem, the worry of it extending over yontif. The third thing we said is that the Vilna Gaon is marked that the lulav should not be yavesh on top, it should not be white. And the Biskarov added that even brown it shouldn't be. So he said that's a chumrah agav chumrah. If there is a chumrah like that, to make sure that it's not white, or surely, according to the Biskarov, even that it's not brown. The fourth thing we talked about was the lulav with the knepel, which the Rush preferred that it had that little fishing hook, because then the tiyomis is protected. However, other people said that it's not so highly recommended because it might be the psul of kafuf, according to some Yishanim. And the fifth and final thing that we said is about the kara, is about the brown stuff on top, which again, the place can say is not so recommended. First of all, because you don't know what's going on inside. It could have psulim inside. Secondly, you won't have that kiskos ha'al, and you won't have that shaking of the leaves as you're shaking the lulav. I just want to end with one thing which doesn't come up at all in the Paiskim and Hilchas lulav. There was a shaila that came up about the canary lulav. What are canary lulavim? There are islands in the Atlantic Ocean called the Canary Islands, right on top of Africa, northwest Africa. And from the Canary Islands, they brought lulavim about 100 years ago, beautiful lulavim to Eretz Yisrael. And the shaila came up, is this considered a lulav? It looks similar to our lulavim, but there are certain characteristics that are different. The stumps of the date tree is different, and the leaves are different. It's a little bit different, but it's similar to our lulav. And lamaisa, a lot of places can have tshuvas about this, and they have to judge on their own because it doesn't come up in Chazal and Shulchan Aruch. So in 1957, there was a shaila's manish to all the Paiskim, Ratziv Pesach Frank, wrote on it, and Ramosha had the tshuva on it, and Nigus Moshe. Lamaisa, basically, without getting into all the whole arichas of the canary lulavim, Ramosha and most of the Paiskim say that it's not a lulav, it's not because of the different characteristics, it's considered min acher. Therefore, when we take a lulav, we have to make sure we're taking kapis tamarim, the real kapis tamarim that comes from Yericho, Yirat tamarim, or comes from other places, the Moshavim, where people grow them even in America. It has to be a real lulav, our type of lulav, that has the same simonim of a lulav, and is not a canary lulav, because a canary lulav is going to be possible. Now, most lulavim that you're looking at are not canary lulavim, so you really don't have much to worry about. However, the mumchim, the experts say that there is a way to check a perfect sinin to show so you can be sure that the lulav is not a canary lulav. And it's kedai when a person is buying a lulav just to do this checking it. While you're checking it horizontally to see that it's straight and everything about the tzur of the lulav, you could do something just to verify 100% that it's not a canary lulav, which Rav Moshe and other places can say that you can't make a bracha on a canary lulav. I spoke to Rav Michal Stern, who wrote the sefer, the picture book of Dal Minim Kashrus Abbas. And he told me, he was obviously a very good mumchen in Dal Aminim, told me a few years ago that the simen muvuk that you could know if something is a canary lulav is that the canary lulav has a very weak shed. It's a very weak backbone. If that's the case, when you hold the lulav horizontally, when you're checking if it's straight, usually the shedra is up. You don't want to put too much weight and too much pressure on the shedra, so you hold it with the shedra up. He said, turn it over and put the shedra on the bottom. Now all the weight is leaning on the shedra, the lulav is going to dip a little bit downward because of the weight of all the leaves on the shedra. By a regular lulav, it'll dip a little bit down. By a canary lulav, the whole thing single rainbow. He said the shedra is so weak that the leaves will mamish like slip and the shedra will sag all the way down. And since the shedra is very weak by a canary lulav, if you turn it horizontally upside down, the shedra facing the ground, the whole thing will mamish rainbow. So if you try that and it looks like it dips a little down, but it doesn't make this mamish big rainbow, so you can be sure it's not a canary lulav. Because all the lulavim that are really from a lulav tree, copies tomorrow that was on the Sira, it doesn't have that dip, it doesn't have that weak shedra. The shedra has a certain strength to it. The canary lulav, one of the most outstanding characteristics of the canary lulav, is that it has a very weak shedra. So besides all the halachas that we're looking at in the tzuyimus and the two of the lulav, just has to make sure again that he has a real lulav and not a canary lulav, just to be sure that he's being mekayem in it.